CITR 101.9 FM. That button's sticky.
Very.
Very. This is the Inkstud Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. CITR way out at UBC in Vancouver. It's a gray day in Vancouver. It's a classic Vancouver day.
Summer's over, folks.
Yep, it's going to be like this from October till...
March?
May. Yeah. This week's special guest is Peter Bagg. Do I got you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Excellent. I'm just checking my levels there.
Hello, Peter.
Hiya.
And I'm joined this week by CITR music director Luke Meat, who makes the occasional Inkstud's appearance. Last time we had him on was Mr. Brunetti when he came on, and that was a fun time.
Actually, Jim Blanchard.
Oh, that's right.
What
yep, Luke
music
was.
Did you play with Ivan Brunetti?
What did we play? I think
he wanted to hear a lot of old, like, vaudevillian kind of music. Didn't
well, no,
he
one there's a one one old blues thing, because I think that's a standard thing when you're cartoons nowadays.
Or it's old.
Yeah,
and we're all having an old fogey contest. Pathetic.
Who gets the walker first?
Who's the most old-fashionedy?
Well, I got the dainty shoes and the specs. The specs? The specs? The little thing like Uncle Scrooge would wear. What are those called?
Oh, well, the spats.
The spats, yeah.
And the sock garters.
Right.
You know.
Although spats are very, that's also very snobby. Because, you know, spats are made out of cloth. And that's how you knew that... he was a man of leisure if he's wearing spats, because no working man could get through the day wearing white cloth on his shoes, you know, and that it suggested you didn't have to walk through streets or fields of mud. You know, only the most wealthy.
so would you say
that's why it was such a sign of wealth, is that only somebody who could afford to be carried everywhere could get away with wearing spats.
So are comic artists the new aristocrats of this day and age?
You could make that argument if you caught any of us wearing spats.
I could only think of one person that I'll probably
Seth?
See. Yeah, probably. I could see him having a couple of pairs.
Who? Which one?
Seth.
Seth. Oh, yeah. But I don't think he wants to put on airs that way. Yeah. Todd McFarlane, he'd wear spats.
He would. And he'd rant for about 45 minutes like a railing coke fiend about how great they are for his artistic constitution.
Anywho.
I don't like Todd McFarlane. We'll leave it at that. We're not
personally
that...
or artistically?
I haven't met him in person, but there's some creative things he done that I definitely wouldn't... Not creative, license stuff. That whole Miracle Man thing really bothers me, because it's a wonderful thing that should be let go and let...
He owns a baseball I certainly wouldn't mind having.
Yeah, he was a baseball player.
Yeah.
He was in the minor leagues, I believe.
There you go.
Yeah, I shared ride with him. That's the only time I ever met him, and it just took baseball the whole time.
He's from my old stomping grounds, Calgary, Alberta, as well.
Huh.
And, that's not a nice place to live. But
right. That's where the Mariners used to have a farm team in Calgary.
They did, yes. The Calgary Cannons, yes.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's go here.
Okay. Oh, that's
and the show's over.
All right, we're done here. Okay.
And that was Pete. Okay. So the reason Pete's joining us today, or Peter, which is better?
I don't care.
You don't care, okay. My dad's a Peter.
Oh.
It's got to be Peter.
Heterosexual males always call me Pete, with very few exceptions, whereas women and gay men call me Peter. I don't know what that says about your dad. But
well,
that being said, I honestly don't care. I don't even notice. I don't even notice if somebody's, for the most part, if you're calling me one or the other.
Well, he's probably listening right now, so he's got a lot to think about.
Okay.
So you're coming to town. The reason, I mean, you've come on before a couple of years ago. It's one of my first, one of my earliest guests of notoriety or fame, I guess, is a good way of putting it. So I'm really happy to have you back on. Part of the reason we're having you on is because Sunday you're going to be in Vancouver at the Word on the Street Festival.
Correct.
And it's actually going to be in the quote-unquote Word Under the Street part, which is the
comic book ghetto.
That's the perfect way of putting it. Basically, right. All the comics folks are stuck into a dungeon in the lovely Vancouver Library, which
right.
has
Although
a wonderful
I have to
compost.
Say I'm glad that we're at least indoors. I'd rather be in the basement than outdoors.
Yeah, because you're from the Pacific, or you're in the Pacific Northwest, so you have a rough idea of what the
right.
end of September's
right.
like. And actually, last year, because of the strike, you were possibly going to come last year, but you're coming up this year.
Yes,
last year, luckily,
I heard that everybody was very stuck in the rain.
They were stuck in the rain, and nothing goes better than comics in the rain. So go and talk to the cartoonists, the folks that are going down to Word on the Street, and ask anyone about last year, and they'll
peruse their soggy wares.
Yeah. So what can we expect from you on Sunday?
From 2 to 2.30, only a half an hour. I don't know if we'll be able to extend it, but officially just from 2 to 2.30, I'll be giving a talk. Somebody named Gabe from Luckiest Comics is going to be my moderator. But he's just going to ask me a few questions, and then if anybody raises their hands, they could ask me questions. After that, whatever time I do wind up ceasing to talk, I'll be signing books for an hour at the Lucky Comics own booth. They'll have their own table there. So, and they're ordering lots and lots of my Fantagraphic book collections. So I'll be signing stuff there. Hopefully they'll have other stuff too, but Fantagraphics told me that Lucky has ordered an awful lot of the hate collections.
I was actually up at Lucky's the other day, and I noticed they also had a big stack of Apocalypse Nerds.
Oh, great, good.
Which is your latest book.
That's right.
Which last time I talked to you, you were, I think, one or two issues in, and I think it took another year and a half for the rest of them to.
Yeah, it took me way too long. Right.
But it's a fantastic series.
Oh, well, thank you.
Agreed.
Agreed. Are you bringing up anything? Any goodies? Or is it basically going to be what the...
No, I'll probably... you know, I might bring some... Because usually people ask me for this. I might bring anything out of print that I have some excess of, old comics or toys or gewgaws, and maybe some small pieces of original art. But, you know, first when I get there, I guess I'll, you know, survey the lay of the land and see if there's any interest, you know, if I should be trying to make some money, let's put it that way.
Well, I recommend the original art thing because people love being able to buy stuff right off the artist. And I was happy with my Spidey G hat that I got off you at Stomptown last year. So.
Okay.
My girlfriend even let me put it on the wall.
Huh.
Which is a rarity of my comic stuff. Most of it gets filed away. Sigh. So, reminder, folks, Sunday, Vancouver Library, Word on the Street, 2 o'clock in the downstairs dungeon. Now let's go into what's been going on for you comic-wise. You have the Apocalypse Nerd collection, which came out, I guess, last year, beginning of the year?
Yes.
Beginning of the year, some time ago.
I can't really remember either, but yeah, sometime last year it came out.
But your most recent thing is your Ron Paul strip you did for Reason magazine.
Yeah, that was the last thing I've done for Reason. And since right now, Fantagraphics is going to publish a collection of everything I've done for Reason so far. And that'll come out sometime next year. I'm not really sure when. But I'm taking a hiatus from doing anything for Reason at the moment. Not because I want to, but it's because I got knee-deep in a graphic novel project that I'm doing for Vertigo right now.
Wow.
And I'm way behind. I'm blowing. I used to never blow a deadline, but the older I get, the slower I get. So I've kind of... I'm putting everything off to the side to get this thing done and some reasonably timely fashion.
Well, first, what can you say about the Vertigo project you're working on?
Well, the title is Second Lives. That's plural. And it is referencing that online community game or whatever you want to call it, Second Life. And what it's about is it follows a period of time with these four characters. But each character, either in their past or in the present, are getting way too caught up and way too involved in these virtual identities, whether it's like on something like Second Life or playing computer games or emailing or espionage. They all have these second identities. And with a lot of them, with several of them, the false identities start to take over and not only clash with their own real lives, but all four of these people, both their real lives and their fake lives all collide with each other.
That sounds kind of a lot like a departure from your normal.
Yeah, somewhat. Although it's still, you know, it's not like I'm delving into the world of fantasy here. I am, but it's still, still reality, and it's about real people who indulge in fantasies and having the fantasies, you know, getting a little bit too carried away. But it's still like almost everything that I do, except for when I'm hired to do a one-shot Spider-Man comic. It's still all within the realm of plausibility.
Now, are you writing and drawing it?
Yes.
All right. And that's funny that you're talking about the problems with the deadlines and stuff, because you're one of those few folks that comes from both sides of the editorial spectrum because of your experience with Weirdo.
Right.
So, and actually, I have a little odd, I don't know, if it's not really a question, it's just a little thing. Kim Deitch was up here a month ago.
Right.
I was saying how you're the next fellow coming up to Vancouver of the comic scene, and he's saying, Pete, he's the best editor I've ever had.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, the only thing with Kim Deitch, the only thing I can remember ever telling him to do is maybe, you know, remember to dot your eyes. He's not somebody that really needs editing.
Well, he said any time that you had any input, any criticism, you had input to provide as well. Instead of just saying something wasn't good, you could say, that's not working, but try this.
Right.
So I think that aspect worked quite well.
I'll be darned. He must be remembering something that I've completely forgotten. Well, hurry for me. Yeah. Sounds good.
That's got to be, what, 25 years ago, the Weirdo days?
Yeah.
So the Reason strips, Ron Paul.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about libertarian politics right now.
Okay.
Because of what's going on in the States.
Right.
What do you think of the $700 billion buyout?
Oh, boy. You know, I can't give you a forward. Of course, ideologically, I'm completely against it. I especially blame, well, you know, I blame everybody, but I particularly blame the Bush administration, and even mistakes that I remember that other people don't, that even the Clinton administration made, although I like to think it wouldn't have gotten this bad if they were still in power. But, you know, it's the feds were the people that kept printing up this money and kept loaning it to these huge banks who were giving it away like candy to people who could never pay it back. So, and also the federal government, and I suppose this is true in most industrialized countries, they insure people's bank accounts, and now they're insuring people's mortgages even. So it's just a case of the federal government particularly just making way more promises than they could keep. They're just, and the same with the two guys that are running for president.
Mm-hmm.
You watch either of them talk, they're just promising the sun and the moon. You know, they never tell people, you know, this is not only is it unwise, it's undoable. Not just to do this, but to wage war all over the world. And, you know, I mean, look at, like, even the, and I'm not trying to let the Russians off the hook, but even the mess that we have in Georgia, it was, to a large degree, it was brought on by our idiotic president,
Corden,
you know, giving the poor Georgians, who they themselves should have known better, but I mean, there's no good guy in this picture.
No.
But he gave them these unfounded assurances. You know, they seem to think like that we're going to go to war with Russia. You know, for them, which McCain thinks is a good idea. He wants to revive the Cold War.
Let's poke the sleeping bear.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's like, you know, we've moved on to another world threat, but let's bring back the bad one too. Go to war with everybody. And that's one of the reasons that I like someone like Ron Paul is just that he lives in reality and he talks in reality and points, like he when I saw him speak, he pointed out the fact that you know, here everybody is wringing their hands and having a fit over the price of oil, but he accurately pointed out that when you pin the price of oil or compare the price of oil over the last 5-10 years to the price of gold or other commodities. You know, gold is the obvious one because, you know, he wants to bring back the gold standard. standard, but silver, copper, anything, any hard commodity, that the price of oil hasn't really gone up at all. If you compare it to something else that's tangible, it's only gone up because we've been, in order to pay for wars and to pay off our ever-increasing debt and to pay for the $700 million, which is going to turn into $2.5 billion once you include the interest, we have to print that money up. And the more money you're printing up,
the less
that causes inflation.
Yeah.
You know, then the dollar, of course, is worth less. Like back in the 70s, Nixon insanely tried to make inflation illegal.
Well, an odd comparison is what happened in Chile with, I don't know if you know much about there, about, I guess, six years ago is when, during the 90s, in their conservative government there, they had a dollar parity, and they just weren't able to uphold the offers they had for having bonds and stuff, and at one point, everyone knew it was up, and truckloads of money, literally truckloads, were leaving in the middle of the night, going back to the States to American investors, and all of a sudden, the banks had to lock the doors, and people's money was, we're screwed. It's all worth exactly half, and you can only take out $200 a month.
I know. It seems like a good idea at the time, but a lot of third world countries and Latin American countries, at least the prospect came up when Europe introduced the euro, of should we pin the value of our currency to the dollar or the euro?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it seemed like a good idea just because it had been around longer to stick with the dollar. And now, like, I have a Spanish publisher in Spain, and he used to export his books, including mine, to Latin America, and he says now not at all. He doesn't sell anything over there because he's Spanish, so he deals in euros, and that makes to the Spanish distributors, that makes his books insanely expensive. So he's not exporting anything there anymore because they're stuck, you know, with the dollar.
Yeah.
Who would have ever thought the Canadian dollar would be worth
more? Oh, well, you know, we've already started sliding down again. It's gone. Oh. It's gone from parity to about, I guess it's about 6 cents right now.
Oh, six cents down. Lower than the dollar?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were considerably above.
No.
Oh, geez.
No,
was a fun ride.
Yeah.
Oh, we were enjoying it.
Yeah, no, I think Canada is going to be facing some similar effects in about a year.
Oh, so. With the mortgages and all of that?
Yeah, it's our housing market boomed here. And we're just, you know, it's starting to bust. And I think Vancouver, there's just been such a ridiculous overexpenditure in homes. And the prices here are just ridiculous because of this whole, ooh, the Olympics are coming, the Olympics are coming. And then, you know, after that two-week euphoria run, it's just going to be messy.
Yeah, that's people are insane to think I want to get, invest in a 30-year mortgage in a specific town because the Winter Olympics are going to be there for 3 weeks.
Yeah. It's,
I think you said it best, Peter, when you said people are insane, actually. But
so much of what's going on, too, the main reason for this $700 billion bailout is psychology. It's all psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Like, technically, it's not needed, by doing this, by infusing all this money into this handful of banks, it just makes the average investor, who you think, you know, and most big money investors are generally they're better educated, and you wouldn't think that they'd be running away from imaginary boogeymen, but it's all to make them feel better, to take out loans and to give loans.
What do you think of this prospect of all these debates being delayed because of the financial crisis? Do you think that...
I would like to think that both the two men that are running for president, Obama and McCain, I would like to think that they took their job seriously enough. I mean, there are only one of 100 people in this country of 300 million people who can vote on things like this. And yet, you know, they've spent the last 2 years running for president,
mm-hmm.
and if I was a citizen of either of their states, I'd be pretty upset about the fact that they're not doing their job in the Senate at all.
It's true, well, considering Obama was just elected,
three
and he's, yeah,
and
years
he's,
ago?
He's spent the whole, he, ever since he's been elected to the Senate, he's been running for president. But of course, so I would have more respect for McCain if he suddenly, miraculously, suddenly decided 2 months ahead of time that he needs to take his job as U.S. senator seriously. But of course, that's not why he's doing it. It's all he's desperate, you know.
Yeah,
it's one of his many Hail Mary passes he's been making, and it's been hilarious too. He's through this whole campaign, he's been shockingly admitting that he doesn't understand economics and the economy is not his strong suit. And ever since this disaster struck, whenever people ask about him on a TV, whenever you see him on TV, he literally looks like a deer caught in the headlights. He just has the most panic-stricken look on his face. So I'm not surprised that he's running and hiding at the moment.
No.
He loved it when all of a sudden this you know, in the grand scheme of things, this relatively minor issue of what happened in Georgia in the Soviet Union, then he was riding high. It's like he was so happy that we might be able to. That's something he understood, being in a, you know,
from the Cold War.
Yeah,
being
having how he was a 5-year prisoner of the Cold War. The good old days.
We're going to do a quick song break because I see Eric's calling in right now.
Okay.
Or he was calling in. Yeah, there he is. Yeah. He's calling in. So we're going to play Pick Me, and then when we come back,
we'll talk about music.
Okay. there actually is a when you play Pick Me, there's a cartoony reference that I got to explain to you. It should be obvious, but if not,
we'll get into it.
I'll point it out.
Okay. So we'll be right back. Inkstead,
okay.
CITR.
Sky, dim your
Okay, I think I've got it.
What is it?
Is that the We Really Mean It from What's Up, Doc?
Yeah.
You got it. Okay.
I got blisters on my fingers.
Grunk. Yeah, all right.
CITR 101.9 FM, this is the Inkstead Show, the radio show where we talk about what, Luke?
We talk about comics.
There we go. But right now we're not talking about comics. We're talking about music. We have Peter Begg, who will be in town on Sunday at Word on the Street down at the Vancouver Library. You can go and see him at 2 o'clock in the basement that they call Word Under the Street. And we're also joined by, let's see if I got your job title properly, paid apologist for Fantagraphics Books, Eric Reynolds.
And Official Shill.
And Official Shill. There we go. I forgot the second part. And these two men make up two-thirds of a band known, once known, I guess, as the Action Suits.
We've got to get Andy on the phone.
I know.
I don't know Andy, though.
He would have given you his number.
I guess I failed. You guys had a couple weeks to suggest it.
Right.
Now, gentlemen, you call the Action Suits the kings of pussy rock.
Right.
Now, is pussy rock the opposite of cock rock?
Apparently.
It's a, you know, multifaceted term, I think. It's the opposite of cock rock, but it's also rock that the ladies will enjoy.
Oh, so it's actually to maybe get pussy then?
It could be.
Okay, I thought that was like
not
more...
Not that
I thought cock rock was to get pussy. But...
I would think that the ladies would prefer cock rock.
Putting the trio back in power trio.
No wonder it backfired.
Now listen, you've got two amazing artists in the band, and the Archies, of course, with Sugar Sugar, were the first band to score a number one hit song through an animated TV show. Can the Action Suits actually, would you ever think of making a cartoon just so you can have a vehicle to get the Action Suits a number one hit song?
Yeah. Sure. If somebody would be willing to pay for it and draw it and make it and put it on the air, we'd be all for it.
Exactly.
So you everything but the music. If that got taken care of, you'd be willing to do that?
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Okay.
I'd be willing to direct the show too.
Years ago, I did an all ages comic called Yeah, and it was about like an all girl rock band. But they had there was a competing band in the comic called Snobs, which was one of the original names for the Action Suits before I joined. And the Snobs basically were the Action Suits. I drew the three members of the Action Suits, but made us look adolescent. And and at one point, the Air was in development as a potential TV show, in which case the Snobs would have been in it too. So in a very roundabout way, there was at one point a slim possibility of the Action Suits being in animated and on television.
We even tried writing some songs for such an endeavor.
why the name change? I think the Snobs is an amazing name. Was it taken?
Yeah, it's a fantastic name. That was before I joined.
Was it taken, though?
I don't remember, to be honest, why. You know, we had a whole bunch of different names and at one point. And eventually, you know, the Action Suits just took hold.
Can I ask what was working with Steve Fisk like?
It's great.
Yeah, did he try to experimentalize you guys at all or anything like that? Because he's done some pretty amazingly weird stuff in his past. So
no, in fact, I'd say Steve actually like went out of his way to kind of like rein it in and make it like sound really authentically, you know, pop. He was like he understood, I think, what we were going for, and you know tried to work towards that.
Yeah, he makes it clear that you know the sky's the limit, and you could. He'd be willing to try anything, so he was very open to ideas. But basically what he did was always to stick with this somewhat, with our somewhat, or not somewhat, very dated sound.
Well, speaking of dated sounds, then Sub Pop recently celebrated its 20th anniversary. You're both located in Seattle, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think a grunge renaissance is inevitable?
Well, they've been talking about that forever, and not in any big way. I mean, there is grunge nostalgia is like this permanent industry, and not that Sub Pop is their business is totally based on that, because they have a lot of bands that aren't the least bit grunge, like the Shins and other people
and the Vaseline's.
Mm-hmm. So they and other labels still make plenty of money just selling the old stuff. My daughter is 18, and over when she turned about 15, I never thought it would happen, but she got totally into grunge music. And as the years went by, of course, it started with Nirvana, but she loves Mudhoney and the Fastbacks and a whole bunch of those bands.
That's funny you bring up Hannah, actually, Peter, because I was going to ask you, is how much influence have you had on her musical taste, or in the case of your obsession with the Spice Girls, was it vice versa, actually, when she was growing up?
Well, I exposed her to the Spice Girls, although I'm sure she would have discovered them anyway, you know, whether I did or didn't, but I got into them first.
Awesome.
Always on the cutting edge.
I win. But I influenced what she listens to largely just from what she was exposed to, the music she'd hear around the house. So her musical taste isn't identical to mine, but or her mom's, but it is pretty similar just because of, again, just what she's always heard, you know, and she would pick and choose through that.
She recently borrowed a Zombies CD from me, which I don't think would have happened if not for her father.
But fantastic
she never,
band.
I mean, after the Beatles, who she also loves, my second favorite band is the Beach Boys, and she just never got into the Beach Boys.
Really?
No. And
what
the
about
Bee Gees, too. I'm a big Bee Gees fan. She, any man singing falsetto, that's her pet peeve.
Oh,
drives
okay.
Her crazy.
Have you picked up Dennis Wilson's reissue of Pacific Ocean Blue yet?
No.
I have.
It's fantastic, by the way. So I'd
it's
highly
great.
Recommend, yeah.
How is it different from the original?
It's a lot of outtakes and just extra songs that didn't wind up on the album. It's a double CD. And
it's got the second album, Bamboo, as well.
Yeah.
Is that good?
Yeah, it is, actually.
It's not, I don't think it's as good as Pacific Ocean Blue, but, you know, they're both right up there in terms of, you know, 70s Wilson Brother projects.
It's much better than Love You, at least.
Oh. Yeah, I would agree. Pete might disagree.
I know. That's why
no,
I said it.
I just remember I've only heard what was the single from my Gloves solo album, which used to crack me up, but didn't send me running out to buy the thing.
Well, that's funny, because I was just going to ask. I want to quote you. His incurable addiction to lawsuits, Peter, are you still a defender of Mike Love to this day?
Oh, I'm not. I don't defend everything about him. But it's more my whole point when I wrote that defense of Mike Love was I find it hard to believe that so many people could be Beach Boy fans in spite of him. You know, too many people who are hardcore Beach Boy fans.
Well, they're Brian Wilson fans rather than Beach Boys fans, I think, actually.
Right. To me, I don't understand. Well, I do understand it, but I object to this sharp division.
Fair enough. And
also, there isn't that sharp a division between the sensibilities of, to a large degree, of Brian Wilson and Mike Love. Brian Wilson can be just as corny and hokey and huckstery as Mike Love can, you know?
Fair enough.
Anybody does other things, you know. Brian Wilson, of course, is, besides being far more talented, he's much more multifaceted and a far more complicated artist than Mike Love is.
I guess it's like the Paul.
For the most part, I like Mike Love. I like his voice, and I'm a big Beach Boy fan.
Absolutely.
And I just think, just from a creative standpoint, I think he gets dissed way too much. I don't want to be his friend. I don't want to go into business with him.
No, I've got a couple of quick ones. I'm looking at the cover to the Action Suits album from Press Pop Music, and Eric, are you specifically looking Beach Boy-esque with the beard there?
You do look like Michael Love in that picture.
Are you asking me if I was trying to?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, but, you know, when I have a big beard and people tell me I look like Dennis Wilson, I take it as a compliment.
Oh.
He was the best looking of the bunch, at least.
He was. He's a stud.
There you go. Now, let's get a little background on who the Action Suits were. Where did it come from?
Well, Eric should tell you that because he was in the group before I was, and I was.
it started pretty informally with me and Al Columbia. Al and I lived together in the early to mid-90s, and we both had just sort of dabbled, you know, playing music and writing songs sort of half-heartedly over the years in our youth. But when we both ended up living together in Seattle, neither one of us had any instruments anymore. At one point, when I moved to Seattle in 93, I sold my guitar to make rent money and was just, you know, I'd just gotten rid of everything and didn't really think I would ever play in a band in Seattle. And Al was sort of in the same boat. He moved out here with nothing. And one weekend, we house sat for a friend of ours. It was this guy named Joe Newton, who used to be the drummer in Gas Huffer.
Yes.
And he had a whole band, their whole Gas Huffer practice room set up in the basement. And we house sat for him for a weekend. And basically, Al and I just spent the whole weekend playing music down in the basement and writing songs and just making up songs on the spot and stuff. And we just enjoyed it so much that, like, we just immediately, like, went out and, you know, bought guitars and just kind of continued it. And we were also living at the same time with Andy Schmidt, who was a good old friend of mine. And so, you know, Andy played bass, and I played guitars, and Al played guitars, and we just wrote some songs, and that was that. The only problem was we didn't have a drummer. That's where Pete eventually came in.
Can I ask, was Gas Huffer offended at such sensitive music coming from their instruments?
Well, I don't know. They probably never heard it, to be honest. Although our music that we were playing, me and Al, probably wasn't quite so purposefully, you know, bubblegummy. And, you know, Pete really, like, kind of gave the Action Suits their identity as this kind of bubblegum band. And I think it's partly because I kind of wrote those types of songs. But I, being a little, maybe being a different age than Pete, I kind of was firmly in, you know, indie rock mode. I was in my early to mid-20s at the time, and, you know, I probably wanted to sound like, you know, Pavement or something more than, you know, Tommy James and the Shondells or something. And so it was Pete who really kind of, you know, said, hey, this is, you know, this song, you should try doing this, you should try doing that. And just sort of, you know, got us out of that mold of sort of just trying to sound like an indie rock band, and actually kind of give us, you know, a little bit of an identity, which was, which I think was a lot of fun, and really ultimately the only appeal of the Action Suits. I think if we had just recorded those songs like a typical 90s indie rock record, it just would have, you know, just sounded as boring as anything, you know.
Now, well, I know so much that, well, Peter in particular, I know you've written about how much you despise live music. How much did the Action Suits play live? Like, did the Action Suits play very many gigs at all?
Yeah, about 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Did you play with anyone of note at all? Or
what's that?
Did you open or play with anybody else on the bill at all? Or?
You know, believe it or not,
we got an offer to open for the Bay City Rollers once. But,
wow.
But we turned them down.
Believe it or not, we were always the headliners.
That's true.
Didn't deserve to be, but we were. Of course, we'd be playing like on a Wednesday night at some dive bar.
Yeah, we played at Comic-Con once with Jaime Hernandez's band and J.R. Williams's band.
What about Alan Moore's band?
Yeah.
Have you heard that?
Comic conventions. We'd love to headline for his band, too, though.
Wow.
I'd be curious to... I've never seen them, and I hear they're terrible, but did you ever hear of The Remainders?
The Remainders, no.
They might not exist anymore.
Oh, is that Stephen King? And
That's Stephen King.
Oh, it's his blues band.
Matt Groening and Amy Tan.
I know who you're talking about, yes.
Yeah. And they're supposed to be horrendous.
On paper, it sounds pretty funny, though.
Our other kindred spirits were Seduction of the Innocent.
Oh, that was
wow.
Really funny, right?
The great early 90s band with, I think... Peter David and
Bill
Billy Mummy and Eve Lealoa.
Oh, no.
They're carrying on a proud...
Did they have, like, Klingon outfits? Oh,
I'm just writing band names down right now, guys.
And now
this is fantastic.
Bolt is picking up where we left off.
You think Lightning Bolt are picking up where you left off?
Yeah.
Who's Lightning Bolt?
Lightning Bolt are a very, very aggressive two-piece. You would hate them, Peter. I'm sorry. They are faster than fast. It's a bass and drum unit, and they usually have a habit of playing in front of the stage. Like, they will go into the audience and basically set up and just play. They play a lot of house parties. There's a fantastic DVD by them. Just Google them. I'm sure you'll despise them. They are absolutely...
Are they cartoonists?
Yes.
They are. Yes.
Brian Chippendale.
The Bryans, yeah.
is one of the most maddening cartoonists if you try and read his
work. He does intense 500-page volumes of stuff, and he's like they are chaotic. And the annoying thing, I don't even think they're out of their 20s yet, actually, which is
Brian might be up there now.
Like, yeah. I hope so, because I hate it when younger people are more talented than.
Are they from Vancouver?
They are from Providence, Rhode Island. Yeah,
yeah. Fort Thunder with like Brian Ralph and a whole bunch of other swell folks.
Right,
but our tall shadow casts all the way from Seattle to Providence.
Well, then there's also James Kochalka, Superstar.
Yes.
Now, why'd you have to go in?
Well, this show has had a history with James Kochalka, actually.
Yeah,
what's that?
His phone was busy when he was supposed to be on.
Oh. He has he had a song that was...
He dissed you. He liked John McCain on Letterman last night.
He was... Yeah. He had a song that was like a minor hit. Something to do with monkeys.
Oh, Monkey versus Robot?
Something like that. I can't remember. I just had the word monkey in the... wasn't a bad song either. I just heard it was getting airplay.
He likes to sing about his penis, calling it a magic finger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Once when I was doing his signing, he just broke into that song out loud. Man-child that he was. I thought it was hilarious, but everybody else was understandably disgusted.
Listen, just back to the Canadian thing. Are there any Canadian bubblegum artists that you enjoy now? Like, were you a Terry Jacks fan at all, or Avril Lavigne even?
Avril Lavigne, nah.
I don't know who either of those people are.
She still is kind of a star, isn't she?
She is up here.
I don't know about 6 or 7 years ago. Eric, she came across, she was packaged to come across as indie.
Yes.
But that's just it. She was as packaged as Britney Spears or anybody else.
Oh, right.
But, you know, she would wear
flannel shirts,
you know, and have splotches of cheap hair color in her hair and stuff.
Yeah.
And what was her big hit that got played forever?
Skater Boy.
What?
Skater Boy.
Skater Boy.
Yes.
Skater
Boy. Yes.
And okay, I really don't want to talk about it. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And Terry Jacks was "We Had Joy, We Had Fun." That
yes.
one, that guy.
Yes, it was.
Okay. He was.
Which
Canadian.
Was actually.
That, I like that song.
That
Seasons
was
in the Sun.
Yes, yeah. It was Seasons in the Sun, but that was actually a the French guy. I'm drawing a blank here. Scott Walker did a whole bunch of songs. Jacques Brel, actually. He did, that's actually a Jacques Brel song.
I was going to say Pepe Le Pew. But.
Nice, thanks. One thing I wanted to ask you, in particular, Pete, I'm sorry I'm asking, I'm not shunning you here, Eric, but I just got to ask this. The reason why I got into your comics was because your characters had such obscure musical tastes, and namely, like, Studs Kirby's obsession with, like, Pete Fountain and Doris Day and Brendan Lee. And, like, now, are these based out of your own tastes and stuff, or is these based on people that you know, or are they based on someone?
It'd be a mix. I would like those three people you just mentioned that's Kirby liked, I liked. And at that time, too, I was somewhat making fun of myself because at that time, say, I would do a comic strip where Studs Kirby is... I think he was having a crisis.
Yes,
wasn't he
was conflicted with Doris and Brenda.
Who was the bigger wallop packer? It was Brenda Lee or Connie Francis.
Yeah. Oh, was it Connie Francis?
Yeah,
okay.
It was Connie Francis, just because, well, the two of them are peers, you know, they're like, their heyday for both of them was like the early 60s when they were both very young,
mm-hmm.
And they both had like a somewhat similar gimmick where they were both tiny, like barely 5 feet, but they had these explosive voices, you know, when they sang, it just came bursting out of these tiny little frames, So yes, Studs Kirby was playing me, and I was making fun of myself. But it was there's another cartoonist named J.R. Williams who's like a musical archivist, and he was, I think it was him that he made me a lot of. I was already very familiar with Brenda Lee, but J.R. Williams made me a bunch of tapes of Connie Francis, and for a while J.R. lived with me back in the mid '80s, and. It was a joke, but we would get into joke debates about who packed more of a wallop, Connie or Brenda. So I just had that turned it into a full-on crisis for Studs Kirby. Pete Fountain I love, too, but that comes from my dad.
Who was Pete Fountain, by the way? Just tell the people. I already know. But
he was Pete Fountain was a clarinet player from New Orleans and played Dixieland music, but very, very accomplished, slick Dixieland music. And I mainly liked listening to his records because that my father had. They were recorded in the 60s because of his drummer. He had a drummer named Jack Sperling, who I still would say he's got to be the best drummer that ever lived. And it's on a Dixieland record, but when you play this record, the drumming is just mind-boggling. And not like in some crazy Buddy Rich way, who, you know, I hate the way Buddy Rich drums because it's just everybody just pay attention to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, in a way, it's like the worst kind of drumming. But
there is something to be said for less is more.
But just the way he plays cymbals is just amazing. So that's the main reason I used to always listen to, and I stole that record from my dad when I moved out of the house, the one where with Jack Sperling on it.
Thank you very much. That's all I needed to know.
Here's a quick question for you, Eric. Tell us what you followed up Action Suits with.
More Action Suits. Which I'm sort of joking, but you know, Pete left the band, and we kept playing for a few years with my friend Chris Jacobs on drums, which Chris probably doesn't want people to know because he's now the general manager at Sub Pop. And it probably wouldn't help his street cred at all.
Being the Ringo Starr of the Action Suits?
I didn't play music for a few years in a band. But for the last few years, I've been playing in a band again. And we were originally called the Reyes, which is named after my wife. My wife's the drummer in the band. But she didn't like the name after a while. She got sick of it, so we changed it. And now we're called the Fox Hollow.
I love the name the Reyes.
I love the Reyes, too, but Rhea couldn't handle it. She just, basically, when we picked the name, we made jokes that that everybody would think that she came up with the name because she was, egotist or something.
Right.
But it wasn't her at all. I mean, she resisted the name right from the get-go, and I forget who came up with it, but the rest of us all really loved it, so we kind of bullied her into it. And it stuck for about a year, but then she just got tired of people coming up to her and saying, you know, what an arrogant person you are.
Did you ever do the
and
punk
I think
thing?
It created a lot of awkward conversations when people, come up that you're in a band and, hi, my name's Rhea. And, oh, you play in a band? Yeah, what's your band called? The Reyes. Yeah.
Did you do the punk thing where everyone had the last name Rhea, like Eric Rhea, and you know?
We used to joke about that.
And Rhea.
Yeah, exactly.
We did actually.
Huh.
So tell us a little bit about Fox Hollow.
We play more. It's still the same type of songs, although maybe a little more contemporary sounding for whatever that means. But it's myself and Rhea Patton, my wife, who plays drums, and then Adam Grano plays guitar along with me. And Adam is one of the art directors at Fantagraphics. And then keyboards is Kayla Graham, who is a local cartoonist and artist as well. And then our friend Kevin Schlosser on bass. And Kevin is one of my best friends who I met through he lives in the same building as another close friend of mine, Jeremy Eaton, another cartoonist. So it all sort of still connects to comics a little bit.
And your MySpace page?
Oh, our MySpace page is myspace.com/ I think Fox Hollow Music.
Excellent. So right. Folks, check that out.
Has some very finished sounding songs on there.
Yeah, we recorded like six songs. I just had a baby a couple of months ago, and before we did that, since we knew we wouldn't be able to play for a few months, we went to a studio and recorded about six songs.
Wow. She played drums while pregnant?
She played drums while about 8 months pregnant.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Can you hit the drums?
What's that?
Can you hit the drums when you're that pregnant?
Yeah, you can. In fact, we were pretty... We didn't know ourselves, but the doctor completely assured us that it was totally okay. And in fact, I'd like to think that she's 3 months old now, and she totally loves music. Like, music is one of the few things that will consistently calm her down if she goes into a fit. And it always has to be something with a pretty driving beat. And I'd like to think it's because, she listened to her mom playing drums for 8 months.
That's awesome.
Aww. A little collective awe. Well, I think we're at the end of our time slot. We've got the next show. They're staring at me through the window.
Okay.
thank you so much for joining me, or joining Luca and I.
Right.
Eric.
Thank you.
Pete. And real quick, I'm in a band now, too, with Steve Fisk. And we have a terrible name. It's Can You Imagine? And do not go to our MySpace site.
Are you pulling
my
leg here?
Do you have a MySpace site? It's
only we set it up just as a way to swap demo tapes with each other.
Wow.
So yeah, it's really bad. So don't go there.
Yeah, that's a really
good. In other words, go there.
I'm checking. I'm as soon as we get off, I'm checking it out.
Don't worry, I will have it linked on the website so everyone can check it out.
Thank you so much, you guys. This is awesome.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me crash.
Yeah, thanks a lot, and I'll be seeing you guys a couple days
on Sunday. You bet.
Yep. All right.
In about 48 hours. Or all right. 72 hours. Yeah. Thank you so much, guys.
Sure.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Peter Bag, whichever predilection you like to pronounce it by, and Eric Reynolds, the publicist and apologist and paid shill for Fantagraphics, talking about the action suits. Don't forget, Sunday at 2 o'clock, Pete will be doing a question and answer and signing at the Vancouver Library downtown. Word on the street. It'll be in the Word Under the Street, which is downstairs. You go in through the main thing, and you go downstairs, and you see a bunch of sweaty guys holding comics. That's where you want to be.
It's going to be awesome.
Awesome. Also, a reminder, tomorrow night at Lucky's Comics, who are also the sponsor of bringing Peter up, there's an art show for You Ain't No Dancer, Volume 3 book by Ed Brisson's, the guy who put that together. And tons of really great cartoonists will be in it, including Jordan Michon, Kaz Strezipek, and a whole bunch of other swell folks. Steve Rolston will have some stuff up. And Lucky's is a good store. I like to support them.
I agree.
Not that they sponsor the show, but that would be swell, Gabe. And I can't even remember who I'm having on next week. Who am I having on next week?
I have no idea.
I should know, but I can't remember.
We should wrap this up.
We should. Thank you so much for everyone listening. And up next, we got Crimes and Treasons. What? Oh, which one am I putting on? Oh, yeah. I'm finishing off with a Fox Hollow song. I'm really out of it today.
All right.
So this is Eric Talia's band, not Pete's band, which you can check out on MySpace.
It's been raining, the roots have deepened.